Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.
Ian Davis is an independent investigative journalist, author, and blogger from the UK. He publishes at the UK Column, Unlimited Hangout, The Corbett Report, The Off Guardian, and at his own website, iandavis.com. And on Substack, his latest piece is Go On, Fight, Fight, Fight. And I want to read you the sentence. Now is merely the current iteration of a struggle that started hundreds, if not thousands, of years ago. It's the same fight that has erupted on streets the world over for eons. It's not a new fight. It is as old as civilization. Ian Davis, welcome to our radio station. Thanks for coming on.
It's my pleasure, Paul. Thanks very much for inviting me.
Okay, what struggle? Tell us about the struggle that's been going on for eons that you're referencing. I guess we can kind of deduce, but I'd like to hear what you say.
I mean, I think it's the struggle between ordinary people and those that rule them. You know, it comes up constantly. I mean, I've recently been looking at just in recent history in the UK. The last time we had anything that we might call significant riots was 2011. So, you know, only about a decade ago. You know, we've had riots in 2020, or, well, civil disorder. I mean, I think that's something that we've seen recently. I think it's a bit of a stretch to call them significant riots. There was certainly some street violence and some outbreaks of unrest, but humanity has been, you know, we can go back to, if we look in 1780 in the UK, there was something called the Gordon riots. You know, the upper estimate is for up to 700 people died during those riots.
Well,
you know, this is, and that was a sectarian riot, actually. You know, that was about the imposition of Catholicism, or the struggle for Catholicism. You know, this is common, that the people vent their anger when they are or feel disenfranchised by you know, the political class, and it happens all over the world. We're seeing demonstrations, you know, in Thailand, demonstrations all over the world. So, and we saw them during lockdowns. We saw them, you know. I mean, this is what people resort to if they feel that their views are not being heard by power, and when they are object to the imposition of things that they consider to be unfair, you know?
Do they have a case right now, those in the streets? And I noticed that the media is always, the British media that I watch, is always saying, well, you know, they're the hooligans and no one can condone that. But it seems to me, from all this way away, that there are ordinary people out there, their issues are real, and it seems also that the state is kind of minimizing them, painting them as a particular sort of person, hooligan, all those words have been used. So have they got a reason to be out on the street?
Well, they've certainly got a reason to be out on the street in terms of, you know, years of underinvestment in places like Southport, where it started, years of, you know, social and economic deprivation in regions. I mean, the previous government had this notion of what they called levelling up. That was going to address some of this inequality of opportunity, because there are massive disparities between regions in the UK. You know, the northeast, the northwest, the West Midlands. These places have suffered from a lack of investment, dwindling economic opportunities, poor employment opportunities, and they are also the places which are most affected by migration. So inward immigration into those areas is the two things are combined. You've got this ongoing social and economic deprivation combined with those being the areas with which are, you know, from a cultural perspective, are changing most rapidly. So, and, you know, there are places in London where that's a very similar situation. Now, You know, so they've got a point in terms of, you know, no one's listening. They're not getting the investment they need. They're not, you know, while their population is growing significantly, they're not getting more doctors. You know, they're not getting more medical services. They're not getting more employment opportunities to meet that growing demand. They're not getting, you know, all this is happening. But I think there are two separate things here. There is the legitimate protest. I mean, the way this started in Southport, there was a much bigger protest in Southport, which was the people of Southport that were protesting against the things that I've just been discussing. Yeah. Then later, there was street violence. Now, it is clear that some of that street violence was orchestrated by people that were coming in from outside of Southport. So,
okay.
Can you legitimately say that there was a reason to, for example, attack a mosque? No, there isn't a legitimate reason to do that. It's, you know, that kind of sort of racist violence is not acceptable in my view, and it's not something that you could describe as legitimate. But do the people, the wider community, do they have a point about what is happening to them? Yes, they do. They do have a point about that. Now, the problem is what the media then does is it focuses on nothing but the violence and paints everybody else that is not subscribed to that violence, that didn't partake in that violence, that has legitimate reason to protest against what's happening in their communities as violent thugs. Further, you know, effectively disenfranchising them and isolating them, and, you know, just amping up the resentment that is already there, which contributes towards, you know, racial and community tension, of course.
So you think there's coordination, unseen coordination?
I think there's unseen coordination. I think what's happened is, you know, there are people that let's say have support from other countries, people like Stephen Yaxley-Lennon, who's, you know, he's also known
Tommy
as Tommy
Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fairly clear that he's backed by Israel. I mean, he's got very close ties to the Israeli state. And, you know, he puts out some information on Twitter, and apparently that causes all the social unrest. Now, I've been looking at that recently as well. There's no evidence that people saying stuff on Twitter caused civil unrest. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's the argument that the media present, but there's no evidence that that is the cause of it. Now, undoubtedly, there are people that are stirring the pot a bit, people like Yaxley-Lennon and stuff like that, but there's no link between what the rhetoric that they are spouting and then the unrest. Now, I think it highly likely that there probably are some agent provocateurs within that movement that do go around and start kicking off riots and street violence. But I think if we're looking at orchestration, as in, you know, who is stoking this and who is shaking the jar, then there are other groups, you know, groups that we might look at like Hope Not Hate, that are equally doing that. So Hope Not Hate, they put out a fake story about a woman suffering an acid attack. You know, that this was, they put out the fake story of a woman being attacked by the far right, which didn't happen, which they admit didn't happen. But no one is censuring them for putting out fake news.
Yep.
It's only the other side. There's clearly bias. But I don't think it necessarily matters which way that bias goes. Okay. I think the point is to increase tension. So, you know, yeah, but we'll pick on what we're calling the far right. Now, this is another point.
I was going to ask you about that. Is that a correct label for anything?
Well, it's a correct label for. I mean, traditionally, this is the point. Traditionally, the far right did mean something. So these were people that were aligned with extreme nationalist views to the point of, you know, you could call them neo-Nazis. Groups like Combat 18, certain elements within the EDL, which doesn't exist, by the way, anymore. I mean, you could call them extreme nationalists, which you could label legitimately far right. And there is undoubtedly a small, tiny minority of those people that remain. But what they are calling the far right in the UK at the moment is simply everybody that is, you know, that is coming, that works and lives in these communities, that is standing up against what they consider to be an unjust and unfair system that is just ignoring them and has ignored them for generations. So the way that the label far right is being applied is completely baseless, because you're applying it to everybody that questions anything,
like grandmothers.
Yeah,
pacemakers.
Grandmothers with pacemakers. I mean, but of course you could have, you know, grandmothers with pacemakers that were members of the Nazi party in Germany.
I hear. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, what they're doing is the manipulation of information, the manipulation of, you know, labels that are applied to people really as little more than propagandist constructs that are applied to people to exacerbate tension. There is clearly an effort, an ongoing effort by the government and by, you know, certain NGOs to, you know, and I would include Hope Not Hate in that. I think Hope Not Hate are very interesting, and Stand Up to Racism as well. I think we need to look very carefully at the, well, I am actually, I am looking at these organisations at the moment, who are contributing significantly to the tensions which snapped in Southport following, you know, the murder of three little children by a young man, a 17-year-old, who was initially incorrectly identified as a Muslim foreign immigrant, kind of, you know, this name came up, Ali al-Shakhtar, I think it was, which was incorrect. And that did spread a bit on social media. But that wasn't, the point is that the clarification came from the Merseyside police saying that that information was incorrect on the 29th of July. So everybody by the end of the day on the 29th of July, everybody, including pretty much everybody in Southport, I would imagine, would know that that information was incorrect.
Yep.
The police had issued a statement, so everybody knew that information was correct. Was incorrect. The riots didn't start until the following day, or the unrest didn't start until the following day on the 30th. So nobody was inspired by that quote unquote fake news. That wasn't relevant, because they all knew it was fake. You know, everybody knew it wasn't true before the unrest broke out. So this whole narrative that the unrest was the result of fake news is provably false. That's not true. I mean, it's obviously not true, right? So then we need to ask what's all this about? Why are they saying that somebody posted? And another point about the people that did post that incorrect information on Twitter. Twitter's the main platform that they're going for, Elon Musk's X. Is most of those people, and especially one of the people who has been, this woman called Bernie Spofforth, who's been particularly singled out, she started her post by saying, if this is true. So she didn't make a statement of fact. She said, she's not the first. There are quite a few other people with reasonable sized accounts that spread the wrong information as well earlier. And they said the same thing. I cannot verify this, but. So nobody was stating that this is known to be true, but this is what I've heard. It's a rumor, in other words.
Yeah, classic rumor, yeah.
So, but the point is that that caveat that people put before putting out that information has been completely ignored, right? Then nobody's talking about the fact that nobody actually said this is factually accurate. It needs to be confirmed. People have just ignored that. These are the kind of little detail, and what, but more importantly, what people have ignored is the fact that everyone knew that information was false by the end of the 29th.
Yeah, and it so wasn't until the next day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the mis and disinformation is being talked a lot about by Keir Starmer. The Met Police Commissioner, the prosecutors, the police are turning up. They're making hay while the sun shines, aren't they, on this?
Yeah, and that only increases my own suspicion that about orchestration, because this quite clearly serves an agenda, and it quite clearly serves a globalist agenda. Now, you know, what they're saying is that something needs to be done about social media to stop what they are calling real world harm.
Yeah.
Now this is all tied into the Online Safety Act in the UK. So we've already seen some elements of the press saying that the Online Safety Act isn't fit for purpose, needs to be strengthened because of the harm caused by terrible social media posts.
Who are competitors of theirs?
Yeah, who are competitors of theirs. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's being touted as a competitor of theirs. And then you say, you know, then you look at companies people like Elon Musk, who is, he's a defense contractor for the U.S. military industrial complex. That's who Elon Musk is.
Good point.
And as for protect Twitter being a bastion of the freedom of speech is complete nonsense. I'm one of the accounts where I'm hopelessly shadow banned. I've got a reasonable size following, and I'm lucky if I get about 200 people seeing anything I write. Yeah. It's nonsense that this is that Elon Musk is defending free speech. I mean, saying things like he did, which there's going to be a civil war in the UK. Civil war's inevitable, I think he said. Now him and his team and his handlers, they know that that's provocative and that's going to start a ruck.
In a
political sense, right? They know that. So, I mean, why are they drawing attention to themselves? And this idea that, you know, Twitter is the last bastion of free... I mean, it's just rubbish. I mean, the last bastion of free speech is us.
Yeah,
you know,
street corner.
You know, it's standing on the street corner and talking to your mates. That's where free speech lies, which is why when you get things like, COVID, the first places they lock down are all the places where people meet.
Yeah, and can talk
because they don't want people to meet and talk to each other. So, you know, the whole situation is being manipulated. There are a lot of parallels, I think, between what we've seen happen recently and COVID in terms of information control and censorship.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're using it for that purpose, that it's being used for that purpose.
Where does it all end up, do you think, Ian? Obviously, if you're going to have a civil war, people have to be armed. Not everyone's armed, I take it. And the military have got bigger guns than anyone. So that would seem to be a very unlikely scenario. Violence, I guess, plays into the state's hands because that gives them more power to police and to showcase groups in a particular way. If you look back on history that we're talking about at the start and the sort of like the waveform of these things happening, where do you think this might end up? And does it sort of like fizzle out at some point? Does it burn out? Or is the government opportunistic moves from the state, the government, going to further fan flames? What do you think?
I mean, there's always that potential. I mean, one thing I would point out is that it has fizzled out. This, you know, whatever, even by UK standards, even by recent UK historical standards, it was a very relatively minor thing, and it was short-lived, and it has fizzled out. But what we see instead of what hasn't fizzled out is, you know, tens of thousands of people turning up on the street with all with the same placards, all, you know, all with the same colours, wearing the same colours, all organised by the same organisations, standing on the street to stand up against racism and going out there to counter the evil, you know, Nazis and the white supremacists, you know. So they're going out there to do that, but they're not facing anybody because there aren't any. There are no protests.
I haven't seen those clips.
So they're just walking down the street protesting against, literally against no one.
Oh dear.
There's no one there. Right? Yep. So I think that's likely to continue. In fact, I know it's going to continue. They've got a big rally to stand up against racism. Meanwhile, I have to say the government is not doing anything about the problems that actually led to people losing the plot and throwing bricks through windows in the places that we were talking about earlier, places like Southport and Rotherham and Manchester and Leeds, and you know, these places, nobody's doing anything. The government is not putting in the investment. In fact, the government has just announced a £22 billion shortfall in its public finances, and is talking about cuts and tax increases.
So
these places are not, you know, those tensions are going to remain high. And meanwhile, in other parts of the country, quite clearly, quite large, reasonably large, and certainly larger than the protests that actually supposed to have started all this, people are out marching in the streets against a myth. They're marching in the streets against a propagandist construct that's been given to them, imagining that in the UK we've got this really significant far right problem, and we don't have that problem. And they think that we do.
Yeah.
So where this goes, it doesn't go to, you know, we talk about the cyclical nature of things. You know, it could lead to, you know, people protesting more and standing outside the Houses of Parliament, but that won't change anything. That will change nothing. It will just go round and round and round, and the same things will continue. The only thing that we can do, really, I mean, personally, this is my view, is that, you know, we need to be more independent of the state. We need to do more for ourselves in our own communities, and we need to build something better. That's the real solution. But, you know, that's not one that many people want to do, because that means a lot of inconvenience, a lot of problems, and a lot of hard work.
Well, I can tell you a lot of our listeners think that way. So that will strike a note there. It's been really interesting talking with you, Ian. Ian Davis, independent journalist and blogger. Thank you for that. And I'm sure we can chat again. I'd look forward to that.
Yeah, it'd be great, mate. Yeah, look forward to it. Thanks very much for having me on, by the way.
RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.